Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. You can find him on X at InkResearch. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, thanks for having me back, and thanks to everyone listening in today.
The Dow hitting a record high. What is that telling us?
Well, it's telling us that there's still enough optimism in the U.S. markets for investors to bid up stocks at these levels. Now, I can tell you that insiders are quite happy with this rally because they're dumping shares into it and making all sorts of money as investors, retail investors, passive investors, people putting money into their retirement money into the stock market at these levels, in even the fact that there are two wars going on that America is deeply involved in, and hopefully not a third, but it's not bothering stock market investors. And American insiders are benefiting from this, taking all sorts of profits. If you can go to our insidertracking.com website, which is kind of our low cost website for solutions, and we put our indicators on there on the homepage. You can see that the U.S. indicator is around 30%, where it started to rally as there was a mini correction. I don't want to call it a correction. In April, there was a pullback in stocks. So insiders started to pick up some bargains, but that bargain hunting's come to a slamming halt here as the market has moved up, and the insider selling is back, taking profits, getting rich as people pour their money into the market, completely unconcerned about the risks out there, which climbing the wall of worry. It's been a good strategy the last 15 years, but at some point, just like the U.S. dollar, the U.S. stock market is bound to hit a wall, and we're coming more higher and higher conviction of that. I don't mean to be pessimistic, come across as kind of a permabear, because the story is completely different in Canada, but I think that we're short of a complete Fed capitulation here on inflation, saying, well, we have other things to worry about now. Which I think they do, and I think that's actually what they think, but they can't say it until they come out and admit that the U.S. market is prone to some big downdrafts, and I don't mean to crash or anything, but just pullbacks, And I think when we'll just have to see how this tech sector plays out. It's been kind of salvaging the market here in terms of sentiment, helping drive sentiment higher. So, there are some big headwinds coming there too, thanks to U.S. geopolitical policy. There's a lot in the mix that should have investors concerned and should be allocating, in our view, a lot more than they are to monetary hedges such as gold, silver, and if crypto's your thing, potentially, look at that, but not a recommendation by any stretch, because the crypto is a high risk type of investment or play, and that's up to individuals to see if they have the knowledge and the skills to understand that. But generally, you know, we continue to see very, very upbeat activity in the Canadian market, given the run we've had so far this year. The Canadian Insider Index is up more than 10%. It's been one of the best performing indices in North America, thanks in part to its resource allocation, resource exposure to basic materials and energy. So we're completely upbeat on the prospects for the Canadian market. I don't know if they've been this good in my professional lifetime as they are right now. And, you know, that's covered a few years now. And I don't think the risks have been so high as they have been in a long time in the U.S. market. I think you have to go all the way back to sort of the 1987-80 area where the U.S. dollar was playing havoc with things, and you had governments intervening to move interest rates around. You have to go back that far, I think, to get to where we are today in terms of risks for the U.S. market. It's a different situation. Back in the 80s, it was a case of friendly countries messing things up with their interventions into currency markets and monetary policy. But I would say it's even more dangerous now because you've got the competition between the NATO bloc, led by the United States, and I'm going to call it the Eurasia bloc now. I think that's maybe an emerging term, led by China, but also being supported significantly by Russia. So we have very concerning competitiveness. I don't want to use competitiveness is not the right word because competition is healthy, but emerging conflict between these two blocks, the NATO bloc and this Eurasia bloc, and so I think for the U.S. market the risks are very high. Insiders are just loving this rally; they're just selling into it, and they love it. I can't blame them.
Now, of course, the U.S. seems to be moving to more protectionism again. They don't want cheap Chinese electric cars.
Right. So climate emergency meets the geopolitical emergency. You know, it just goes to expose the political insincerity of many Western leaders on the climate change issue. If you really believe there was a climate emergency, that we were facing a existential kind of potential threat to humanity, you would be loading up on every cheap EV you could get. It wouldn't matter whether it was from Detroit, whether it was from Shanghai, whether it was from Sweden. It wouldn't matter. You would take as many as you could get. But apparently, there's a geopolitical situation here because too many of those cars are being produced in China. Well, and there's all sorts of reasons why one can be critical of Chinese industrial policy, just as there were criticisms of Japanese auto industry policies way back in the sort of the 80s and 90s. However, if there is a climate emergency, why wouldn't you be loading up on all of this stuff? But apparently, Jim, this climate emergency isn't that much of an emergency after all. And so that's, I think one of the first things we've learned from this move by the Biden administration to slap on these tariffs. Now, the remarkable development here is that, it just adds to the inefficiencies of the U.S. economy. So I don't see how that's consistent with a roaring stock market. I just don't. Now, one can say, well, look at NVIDIA. NVIDIA is, it's a leader in global AI chip design, and it is. However, we've got the Biden administration basically telling NVIDIA, well, you can't sell to the second biggest market for your chips. You can't sell your best chips. I believe they can still sell. you know, chipset. Washington deems it okay. So time will tell if this is a strategy that works out in America's interest. But our immediate concern is whether it supports the current trajectory of the U.S. stock market, or whether investors will start to see problems. And that will only happen, though, Jim, I think, given the momentum that's developed in the stock market over the past decade or so, you know, if the earnings start to slow down and investors actually recognize that. So, you know, we're not there yet. And in fact, if those people who are subscribers or members of the Canadian Insider Club, you can take a look at the current InkEdge outlook for NVIDIA, and it's in the top 10% of all stocks ranked, and that's because of their growth, the momentum in the company. It's not a stock recommendation, just a fact, you know, in terms of where it sits in our rankings. And so, you know, in the next, you know, sort of year or so, NVIDIA is in, positive grouping, you know, in terms when it comes to stocks. So, you know, I think that the one is, though, playing with a very short-term time horizon now in terms of how much more momentum this U.S. market can go. And again, you know, the insiders are selling into it. Now, look, if the Fed capitulates and said, you know, basically says, okay, we're actually cutting rates. I know inflation is not quite at our target, but we believe it's coming to our target, you know, which would obviously be spin. But if they capitulate on inflation and start juicing the U.S. economy with rate cuts, then you know, nominally speaking, we're probably off to the races in the U.S. market. But we're not there yet. We still have the Fed with relatively, you know, tight monetary policy. They haven't cut rates, and they've got, as they keep the rates high, the U.S. deficit keeps getting, you know, bigger as interest rates start, you know, as interest rates become more costly. So the Fed is really not in much of a position to do anything except cut rates. The only question is when. And so this is also an issue for the U.S. market, in that they need these rate cuts, and the longer these rate cuts do not happen, I think the harder it's going to be to get more money to head into the U.S. Into the U.S. stock market. So we will see how that goes. On the flip side, though, I think the precious metals market, they can sense what's coming. That this I put a tweet out there the other day that, you know, the Fed's tight monetary policy is really in a blind alley. You know, it there's nothing really it can solve now, because it's working to restrict the economic growth. It's working to restrict, you know, climate policies, because, you know, it's harder for companies to finance solar projects, for example. Now Joe Biden's going to make it even more expensive by pushing up the price of solar panels effectively. You know, so we'll see how this all plays out. But the Fed cannot raise rates anymore. They can only cut rates at some point, and they will do that at some point. I think the gold market is sniffing it out, and you know, we will see when that happens. But it's just a matter of when, in our view, and not if. And I think the gold market is, you know, that's what the gold market's telling us.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, we're going to be featuring this on This Week in Money on the weekend. But are we running into a silver shortage? Apparently, there's been a deficit on demand for the last 4 years, and the actual physical product is going to really start drying up in perhaps 2 years.
You know, I was thinking about that this week. It's a great question, because, you know, with Biden's tariffs on solar cells, I was worried, you know, well, is this going to dampen the demand for silver? You know, if the demand dries up for solar panels because they're too expensive. And I thought about that, but, you know, we've had a big ramp-up in silver, and the price of silver hasn't done anything. And, you know, for as I'm sure most of your listeners will agree with. And it leads me to think that what's going to happen here with silver isn't a supply issue. It's a demand issue, and it's a demand issue for the monetary side of the metal. Traditionally, silver is seen as sort of half, one foot into the industrial metal side, and one foot into the precious metal side, and so it kind of straddles both, right? And as gold keeps moving higher, which we think it will for a whole host of reasons, it's going to drag silver up. And I think, you know, at some point, you're going to get North American investors looking at it as, you know, the U.S. market loses some of its momentum here. And you've already seen, I think, an uptick in demand in Asia for silver. So it's being pulled up, I think, by just astute investors saying, well, wait a minute. You know, we got copper trading. You know, I believe it's touched new highs. We've got gold touching new highs. Why is, like, silver still sitting here? Isn't, like, silver a good opportunity? So I think you're going to have more and more investors thinking like that, and I think it's going to be a demand boost if we do get a rise in silver, and then all the supply issues will come into play because, you know, as you mentioned, there's, you know, the industrial side appears to be, you know, if you look at the price in balance, you know, it's because silver hasn't really been doing much, but if you get an uptick in investor demand, well, I would say look out.
What does this mean for Canadian miners?
Well, we're pretty upbeat on the whole resource space. So let's just, before we hit the miners, I just want to make one final comment here on the solar. So here we have Joe Biden, you know, kind of putting up these tariffs. Now, they're going to be phased in, I believe. So they're not all at once. Unlike, I believe the EV ones are hitting pretty fast. But I believe the solar ones are being phased in. And by the way, now they're going after some other Asian countries that maybe use some Chinese solar inputs. There was an announcement today the day we're recording this on Thursday, on the 16th, we had Washington, I believe, put out a piece where they are now going to be looking at doing tariffs on these, which countries here? Cambodia, Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam. Okay. So, and this is in relation to solar imports. So the projections for solar, it was going to eclipse natural gas as a power source for America, you know, by, I think it was 2050. Well, I don't see these tariffs accelerating that, that's the best case. At a worst case, it's going to make it even harder for utilities to justify on a business case doing an additional solar project. So I think kind of the winner, you know, one of the potential winners of this Biden onslaught of tariffs is going to be the fossil fuel industry, natural gas. So, I mean, this, you can't make this up. And, you know, because you've got utilities that already have capacity to generate natural gas, and one of the biggest and most important strategic utilities in the United States, Dominion Energy, which powers all those servers in the Virginia area, right? They're looking at storage, but not battery storage. They're looking at storage for natural gas to make sure they have enough natural gas to power all these servers that that are going to be needed to deal with this AI push. So, yes, I think that the definite winner. A definite potential winner of these solar tariffs in this climate emergency is going to be natural gas. Now, when it comes to the Canadian miners, they too, you know, as we build out these servers, are going to be needed. You know, copper is going to be needed, and that I think we're starting to see. There's a fellow I follow on Twitter called Hedgehog Trader, and he's put a very interesting chart out, and he updates it once in a while. And it's the copper ETF of copper miners versus NVIDIA, and it's kind of ticked up here because I think, again, some of the more thoughtful American investors are starting to think, well, wait a minute, we've had this great run in NVIDIA, but how are we going to build all these servers with that hold these NVIDIA chips? Ah, they're going to need copper. You know, Robert Friedland's been talking about this for months. He's been, God bless him, you know, he's been evangelizing the role that basic materials play in the energy transition, and now people are starting to catch on, and I we're seeing a nice move in copper, and we're starting to see a nice move in copper stocks. So we've got the copper miners doing quite well. We've got the gold miners doing quite well. Now they've bounced. I know. There's a group of gold miners. They don't go up. Well, they've gone up actually quite a bit. Some of them, there's always good ones and bad ones. And we've focused on a number of them in our reports so far this year. I mean, we kicked off the year saying that 2024 was going to be the year of the copper, gold elephant hunt. And some of these stocks, have already doubled this year. And certainly over the last 6 months, not all of them, but, some of them, there's a lot of interest in, I think, that's been moving into the copper and gold miners. But that leaves the silver miners, right? And they have bounced off of the bottom, off of their bottoms a few months ago. The question is, where does silver go from here? Do we get that demand, that investor demand that I think is going to through, and I think is going to be recognized, and we could the long, very patient silver investors, silver insiders, I think there's a very good chance they will have their market this year.
Now, when it comes to copper, Canada produces 2.4 of the copper globally, ranked 12th overall, and most of that comes from BC. So British Columbia should profit from this.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think BC is one of the more underrated jurisdictions in terms of mining opportunities. And for a number of years, there were concerns over the sort of how the First Nations issues were going to play out. But I think successive governments have done a lot of work on that file. And now I think there are, as an investor, there's a checklist you can kind of look at any project in British Columbia, and one of those items on your checklist has to be where you stand with your First Nation communities around your project, and if they have their bases covered, and if they have memorandums of understanding with the various First Nations around their project, then you've eliminated some of the big risk there. It's never totally, you've reduced it, let's just say. I mean, eliminate is probably not the right word, reduce. You've reduced some of that risk, and if anything, you may have, on the other hand, have helped accelerate the whole permitting process by reducing that risk, by making it harder for regulators to stop your project if you've got the First Nations on board. So I think I think people are beginning to understand that BC, you can actually get a mine done. There's a very large gold-silver mine that's slated to start this year, at least have its first pour in central British Columbia, the Blackwater mine, and it seems to be on schedule, it seems to be on budget. It's a very significant project, and it's been built very, very efficiently by the team behind it. So we're not quite at the finish line yet, but it's looking really good. And I think once that mine gets going, people will go, oh, wait a minute, like who's delivered the latest biggest gold mine in North America? Well, it's British Columbia. And so there are a number of copper gold projects on the go. We cover them in our morning report, on the juniors that are at the early stage of the Lassonde life cycle. And but we're going to need more and more copper to deal with the AI revolution, never mind the energy transition. So think that there is definitely the wind is at the backs of BC copper miners, and I would say soon silver miners. So it's and I think you raise a good point too about the Jim the extent of the mining in BC and in Canada. You know, we have our challenges in Canada. We have our political and economic challenges, and that's a discussion in itself. And there's a lot of very bearish talk about the Canadian dollar, and a lot of it is really just well deserved. And there are challenges that we're facing on the productivity side, and there is the real estate overhang, but we've got all these resources in the ground, and if they come out of the ground, we'll be exporting them. And if the gold price continues to move higher, and we start seeing copper and silver continue to strengthen, it's probably I would say most of the bad news in the Canadian dollar is probably baked in. Yeah, maybe have a bit more to go. We still have a year of the Trudeau government, so there were no kind of surprises will be coming out of there. But I think a lot of the bad news is baked into the Canadian dollar, and not very much of the resource heft that Canada has been recognized. So that's where I'm really the most optimistic about my country, is our ability to get resources out of the ground right now. Yes, I'm glad we do have a vibrant technology sector, and and I applaud everyone working in that, especially given the allure of going to the United States to do it. So we do have a very good biotech and high tech area, but where the area that's most underappreciated, and I think that can have the biggest impact this decade, in this decade of such high geopolitical conflict, and where the stakes are so high in getting things built now, that I think the Canadian market is in the early innings of a nice rally here. As I said, the Canadian Cider Index is up double digits this year. A lot of that is thanks to oil and gas. Whether the oil side can keep delivering at least for the next few months, we'll have to see. There's different cross winds going on on the oil side of the oil patch. But the natural gas side, it's been recovering here nicely, and it may have a nice future here in powering all those AI server farms that Joe Biden is going to basically make it difficult for them to use alternative energy sources. So I'm very optimistic about the Canadian markets, particularly given our resource exposure. It's disheartening that it's disheartening to see some of the, I'm not going to go into it, but because we talked about it the last two shows, so people who are interested can go back and take a look. But it has been disheartening to see some of the major institutions retrench from this market. But I think you're starting to see more thinkers, you'll see more American, European investors coming in, who are thinking about everything that we have here in terms on the resource side that very few other jurisdictions have.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.